Good evening, everyone. Have a new face tonight. Ying has joined us for the sit, and we need to do introductions of our
Ellie,
Jeffrey,
Nico,
Yap,
Ying,
Marie,
Lima,
Mike,
Wendy,
Karin,
Eric.
So, have you been here before?
I've been to Jikoji.
To Jikoji, that's why you're familiar. Welcome, welcome. That's great.
Lila.
Yeah, I remember when you described your name, how you made it up. Yeah, it's such a great idea. And Lake, it's lovely to see you. So we're chugging along in Vimalakirti's room. All sorts of amazing things are happening in it. I was thinking as we were chanting all Buddhas and ten directions, past, present, and future, all Bodhisattva, Mahasattvas, world-honored ones, the Maha, Prajna, Paramita, we're calling them all into our room. It's actually inviting all of them in, just as Vimalakirti did. And we can offer them very, very tall golden seats if we think they deserve it. but in any case, it's a kind of welcoming that is a very nice way of ending the chanting that we do. So in this chapter, it's called Seeing Akshobhya Buddha. I don't know how to pronounce that. That's made up, too. I thought Thomas Cleary would make it more simple, but he calls it reception of the world of delight and vision of the imperturbable realized one. So that's even hard to remember exactly. But in fact, the world of delight is the focus of this, and the imperturbable Buddha is the reigning Buddha of this land, the Buddha of the world of delight, or as Burton Watson calls it, the world of, he has another word for it. Which I can't remember, but we'll come to it. Because in the beginning, Buddha said to Vimalakirti, Buddha is there now. He wasn't in the beginning, but Buddha has appeared. And they have a little conversation. He said to Vimalakirti, you wanted to see the thus come one. You wanted to see the Tathagata. How do you regard the thus come one, the realized one? How do you think about that? And Vimalakirti said, as I would regard my own true form or reality, in that same way do I regard the thus come one. I regard the thus come one as not existing from past times, nor departing in the future, not abiding here at present. I don't regard him as form. And immediately I thought, him? No, I don't think so. But all the way through, the translation uses him as having the nature of form. I don't regard him as perception, conception, volition, or consciousness, or resembling consciousness, or having the nature of consciousness. He goes through and erases every possible thing that the Tathagata, or the realized one, or the greatest of Buddhas could possibly be. He's not identical in form, but then he goes on to say what he is. He's not mixed up in things of the world. He's separated himself from the greed, anger, and stupidity. He's passed through the three gates of emancipation and acquired the three understandings, which are the equivalent of ignorance. He's not identical in form with others, not different in form, not of his own form, not of some other form, not lacking form, not acquiring form. He is not on this shore, not on the other shore, not in midstream, and yet he converts living beings. He is seen to be in tranquil extinction, but does not remain in extinction for long. He is not this, he is not that, he does not show himself in this or that. One cannot know him through wisdom, one cannot be conscious of him through consciousness. Without darkness, without brightness, without name, without form, without strength, without weakness, etc., etc., in the end he is cut off from all that can be said in words. Which is what we say when we talk about the Dharma. In the end, it's not expressible in words. There's no way to touch it with words. He is not in a field that produces merit and not in a field that doesn't produce merit. He's not worthy of alms. He is not unworthy of alms, etc. He is identical with the ultimate reality, one with the Dharma nature. So he cannot be labeled or measured. He's beyond all labeling and measuring. Not big, not little, etc. He is removed from all ties and bonds, equal to all wisdoms, identical with living beings. After all that, it comes down to this. Is identical with living beings, free from distinctions with regard to things. He's without loss or contamination, without anxiety, without action, without rousing, without birth or extinction. No words or explanations whatsoever can distinguish and depict him. So Vimalakirti goes on, world-honored one, the body of the thus-come one is like this, and this is the way I regard him. To regard in this manner is called correct regarding. To regard in any other way is called erroneous regarding. At that time, Shariputra, who has been there all along, asked Vimalakirti, where did you die before you were reborn here? Shariputra is a little naive and is always either getting stuck a little bit, like with the goddess, or asking naive questions. And Vimalakirti says, in the truth that you learned, is there any such thing as dying or being born? And Shariputra said, no, there's no dying or being born. And Vimalakirti says, well, if all things are without the nature of dying or being born, then why do you ask where I died before I was reborn here? What's your opinion? Do phantom men and women conjured up by a magician know anything of dying or being born? No, there's no dying or being born for them. And have you not heard the Buddha say that all things are in the nature of conjured beings? Yeah, replied Shariputra. So if all things are in the nature of conjured beings, then why do you ask where I died before I was reborn here? Shariputra, dying is in its nature simply the destruction of something that is empty and fraudulent. And being born is in its nature the continuation of something that is empty and fraudulent. But the Bodhisattva, though he dies, does not wipe out his good roots. And though he is born, he does not prolong those things that are evil. Or reconnect continuity of evil, reconstruct a continuity. This is a very gnarly little paragraph. What he's suggesting is that conjured beings means ideas. We have ideas of what we are and what they are, what each thing is that we meet. But it's all made up. They're all made up, projected ideas in our mind, including ourselves. Because as we actually I want to say flew through the world, we are constantly changing from one kind of being to another kind of being. Even though we have an identity and we don't lose our identity, still that identity keeps shifting and changing, as we know from the moment we're conceived all the way up until our dying breath. We're different every moment. And so if we take ourselves as something solid and complete and fixed and just like this, it's a mistake. And so thinking that birth means emerging into a world that is solid and that we are solid and unchanging is, empty and fraudulent seems pretty extreme, actually. But I think we understand what it means. We take it too seriously. So then Buddha said to Shariputra, there's a country called Wonderful Joy. That's what this translation says. Wonderful Joy. Or Thomas Cleary says delight. A wonderful country with a Buddha named Imperturbable or Immovable. Vimalakirti died in this country and was reborn in this one. So that's where Vimalakirti came from. And Shariputra says, with big eyes, I've never heard of such a thing, world-honored one, that this man could bring himself to abandon a land of purity and willingly come to this place with all its wrath and injury. Vimalakirti said to Shariputra, what do you think? When the light of the sun shines, does it mix with the darkness? No, replied Shariputra, when the light of the sun shines forth, all darkness ceases. So, Vimalakirti said, and the sun, does it visit this continent here? Well, because it wishes to use its brightness to drive the darkness away, replied Shariputra. Vimalakirti said, the Bodhisattva is like this. Though he is deliberately born in an impure Buddha land, he does this so he can purify and convert living beings. He does not mix with or share its stupidity and darkness. He merely dispels a great darkness of earthly desires that besets living beings. At that time, the members of the Great Assembly were filled with longing, desiring to see this wonderful joy world. And Buddha, imperturbable, and his host of bodhisattvas and voice hearers. And the Buddha knew what they wanted. And he said to Vimalakirti, sir, you must make the land wonderful joy, and the thus come one immovable, and his host of bodhisattvas and voice hearers visible to the members of this assembly. Vimalakirti thought to himself, now, without rising from my seat, I shall take this country wonderful joy, with its iron encircling mountains and rivers, its valleys, waterways, great seas, etc., with its sun, moon, stars, and palaces. Old and men and women, old and young, along with the immovable, and the Bodhi trees and the lotus blossoms that carry on the Buddha's work, the jeweled staircases and all the things immovable has, and listen to and receive his sutra teachings, and the inhabitants of this land may also ascend those stairways and have a chance to experience wonderful joy. And so I shall lift from its place and take in my right hand, as though removing it from a potter's wheel, bring it here to this world like some flower garden I'm holding, and show it to all these beings. All those people cried out together, "Look, world-honored one, someone is making off with us." All the ones who lived there, "Save us, please." Get a little drama here. Immovable Buddha said, "Don't worry, this isn't what I'm doing. This is Vimalakirti, his supernatural powers." And so they were placed on the ground in this world, even though their size didn't change. It fit right into Vimalakirti's little room. So Shakyamuni Buddha addressed his great assembly, saying, "Do you see the wonderful joy world that thus come one immovable and the adornments of his land?" And they all said, "Yes, we've seen them." And the Buddha said, "If bodhisattvas wish to acquire a Buddha land as pure and spotless as this, they should study the way practiced by the thus come one immovable." Just study the way. You don't have to go out and earn a lot of money. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to go to school. Just sit down and study the way. So they all were terribly excited and very happy and set their minds on attaining enlightenment, and all desiring to be born in the Buddha land, wonderful joy. And Buddha said, "You will be born in that land." Then the wonderful joy world, having finished bestowing enrichment and benefit upon this country, returned to its original place. Very easy, just like that. And all the members saw it do so. Then the Buddha asked Shariputra, "Did you see this joy world and the Buddha immovable?" And he said, "Yes, I saw them, world-honored one. And I beg you to enable all living beings to acquire a clean and pure land like that of the Buddha immovable, and to gain transcendental powers like those of Vimalakirti." He said, "I and the others have acquired excellent benefits being able to see this person. So all living beings, while the Buddha is here and after he's passed away, if they hear the sutra, will acquire excellent benefits. And how much more so if hearing it and believing it? So holding this sutra is acquiring the storehouse of jewels, the storehouse of the jewels of the truth. So reading and understanding and practicing it and copying it and telling people and giving alms to such a person who does these things, they let it be known that the thus come one will visit their rooms. And if there are those who hearing this sutra can respond with appropriate joy, those persons will forthwith acquire comprehensive wisdom. Even understanding and believing one four-line verse of it is enough." End of chapter. It is so like a fairy tale. And yet it's not about magic. It's about us about the way, about the truth, about practice, about being, the untalkaboutable of which we are such a part. So, questions, comments, discussion? Yeah, love?
So, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that it's kind of like they hold a carrot up to them and tell them, go get this carrot.
Yes.
It seems to go against everything that they've ever said. You don't attach to a goal, you know? It's not the goal. So here they are saying, like, here's this carrot, go get it.
Yes, it's true. But there's a difference. If the goal is a self-serving goal of saying, oh, I'm going to get this for myself, it's one thing. But to see that there is a way that is possible for oneself and for everything is different.
A way to do what?
Because it's not a personal thing anymore. It's not a personal acquirement. It's seeing what the possibilities are. That it's not a totally rotten world. That the seeing of it is a view. But there are other ways of looking at it. And what they're showing over and over in this little sutra, all the different ways that there are to see this saha world, they call it, this world of suffering, and see that we ourselves each is a Buddha field, even though it's very hard for us to know that without practice. But this offers us the opportunity to, in a very picturesque and old-fashioned kind of way, to say, see, this is what you really are. So you don't have to aspire to it. You can just accept that, yes. Oh, thank goodness, somebody saw it. That's right. I remember. This is the way it is. Of course. So that our view of the saha world changes. And our suffering changes. We still suffer, but it's a different kind of it. Yeah. It's a good question. Thank you. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean with we still suffer, but it's a different kind?
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, but sometimes people think, oh, I'll just read all these wonderful things and I will practice real, real hard and then my life will just be smooth as butter. I just glide right through the rest of my life with no problem. It's not true. And sometimes they think, oh, you know, you get something like this, go through a ceremony and everything, you know, seems all kind of golden and special and you think, oh, now, you know, now I've got it. You realize, it's harder. It's really much harder. That there's more and more responsibility if you're willing to take the responsibility. Once you realize that each life is a field, and it's a field in which to do good work, but it takes an intention, a conscious intention, an acknowledgement of that field. And that's what this means. A virtuous field far beyond form and emptiness. Each of us is one of those. And if we're willing, we have a job to do. And it's a different job for each person. You know, you could be digging ditches your whole life. Or saving mankind from nuclear weapons or something. It could be anything. It's what your deepest intention is expressing. it's a challenge, and if you're willing to go there, it's an endless challenge. It's not easy, but it's a wonderful life at the same time.
So, when you refer to intention, you don't speak about the pursuit of the way, but you speak about an intention in the world.
Yes. Yes. He said, after describing all these things, he said, it's all in living beings. Now you think, oh, he's describing some fabulous creature, and then it comes down to, oh, he's talking about us. Wow. So it's a great message in a way, and it's a hard one. I say being a bodhisattva is really hard. Harder than being a Buddha.
Trying to remember, I really relate to the Shariputra wide-eyed one.
Yes. Yes, me too.
And what was that thing? That kind of thinking is called erroneous.
Oh.
Something.
It's weird. Fraudulent. Empty and fraudulent.
Feel like I'm in this phase where I'm keep being more aware that, oh, that's erroneous, that's false something, you know, and kind of, but I kind of not really relaxing with much, I guess, just because I guess I'm just realizing and uncomfortable in my realizations, I guess.
Yes. That's good. Yeah. Thank you for that hard practice.
Very condensed in something like the Heart Sutra, mm-hmm. the same, you know, and all the negations of what the Buddha is not, it's just the same sequence of negations.
Yes.
To use that word, negations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not this, but it's
yes.
also that. And it's not, he's basically talking to the Buddha and saying, you're not all of this. He might as well have said, it's not you, it's me, but it's you too. Or it's
exactly.
It's very like, you know, I'm the walrus. You know? It's like, I am he, as you are me.
Yes. Yes. You know what that's called, of course. Interbeing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's a very beautiful thing, and it's a very real thing. The thing. So as I'm reading this, I'm also struck, you know, just from a historical perspective, on the document itself, the sutra itself.
This one.
Yeah. It feels to me that in addition to having all the metaphysics of Buddhism, let's just say, but...
Or Mahayana.
Yeah. And the whole prajna bit.
Yes, exactly.
It also sounds, I don't know how to put this, or maybe I do, I'm not really sure if I do. It also sounds like it's a document designed to advance a religion, or to establish a religion, as opposed to a slightly pre-religion take on it. I can't quite find how I want to say it or position it, but it sounds like, you say it sounds like a fairy tale, and so I'm struck how it's operating on these two tracks. It's got the metaphysics, and the metaphysics seem very important and real.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel an intelligence inside the sutra, in the writing of it.
There is.
That has a very definite purpose, and that kind of relates to what you were saying, like they're banging on the carrot, and the carrot is kind of like, it feels like a teaching story.
It is
a teaching story, but whereas...
It is a teaching story. The whole thing is a teaching story. And because it's a story, it makes it easier to access. But what it's pointing to is what I said before to Layla, that it's the view. It's encouraging a certain way of seeing, the eye of wisdom, which often is difficult to isn't often encouraged in the world and in life. And so in order not to make it this heavy thing, which it's not, in order to express the truth of it, of what prajna is, it's pointing to our own intelligence and wisdom and encouraging us to see things as they are, just as they are.
Yeah, it's also, and I probably know just enough about this to be wrong, but it seems like it's a sectarian document as well as a teaching document. That's what Shari Kutcher is. So I'm not really sure what I'm...
Well, it has been used as sectarian. It can be used as religion. I mean, religion is really not what Zen is. It's Colvin always said you could make a religion out of it if you wanted to, but this is not considered to be a religious document. It's considered to be historical in a way that is teaching material, just like all of the sutras of Buddha's words, the very very ancient ones. They're teaching, and the teaching is in words about the wordless. So all you can make all kinds of different stories around the wordless, and this is one way of doing it. This is very, very popular and has been through the ages, and people have, San Francisco Zen Center has a whole play, a little play that they put on every year with Shariputra and the goddess, where she turns him into a girl and becomes Shariputra and flips the whole thing. So it's on purpose amusing.
It's very Disney.
It's very Disney. It's very Disney, yes. So it comes out of an ancient Disney-like world also. It's not like our world at all, of course. It's kind of amazing. I mean, if you go to India, you begin to realize where these things come from, that it's a whole another culture. And what we feel in this is the culture that it's coming from, which is very different. As soon as you get off the airplane, you are hit in the face with a change in your mind because of the culture. And it's a mind culture, it's a consciousness culture. So you're pointing to something very important. The truth. That's the truth of it. Thank you. So it's time to stop. We'll sit for 1 minute.
Yeah, would like to
oh, sorry, Wendy.
That this Saturday is
yes.
our full day sit from 9 to 4 right here. And it's an opportunity for Dokusan song and morning, and Angie's talk will be at 1 after our break for lunch.
Come one and all. Mm-hmm. And if you can't come for all of it, come for part of it. Thank you.